Hello everyone, this is Mike Quinsey, Connecting the Light. My guest today is Karen Anderson. She refers to herself as America's animal communicator. She's also a psychic and medium. And in addition to communicating with animals, she tells us that she can also connect with human energies. So, welcome to the program, Karen.
Well, thank you very much, Mike. I'm really happy to be here.
Right, I'm very pleased to have yet another animal communicator on the program. I think you're possibly the third one, and they each seem to have their own approach and their own background. And having mentioned that, when were you first aware that you had any ability to communicate with animals?
Well, actually, the first time as an adult that I realized that I could understand them, I was a police officer in Colorado, and it really took me by surprise because I was not expecting it, and it kind of shocked me. And then I remembered being able to understand them when I was very, very young, but then back when I was very young, I thought everybody could. I didn't know that it was something different or unusual. So it took about 3 decades for me to finally grasp that ability as an adult and then practice with it, and now here I am.
Right. So did I hear you correctly there? Did you say you had a dog and that is where you first realized you had this ability?
No, when I was a police officer.
Oh, right. Okay. So, what about the follow-on to that? I mean, did you think that might have just been a one-off experience, or did you deliberately sort of expand it to see how far it went?
Well, I was surprised the first time that it happened, but then I was intrigued, and back when first message came to me, it was from one of my own cats, who was actually having a very serious health issue going on. And when I realized the power behind the ability to understand animals in what I call literally our English language, I got everything I could at the library and bought every book that I could, and there wasn't internet back in those days. So I had to really just study whatever I could get my hands on. You go to the metaphysical section in a bookstore, and there wasn't very much there, let alone anything on communicating with animals. So I really just practiced on my own and threw myself into it because I was so intrigued.
Right. Now, it obviously developed from there. So when did it become something that obviously took up a lot of your time, and in fact you sort of invested in it? You started evidently doing readings for people, you wrote your book Hear All Creatures. So what made you decide to sort of go into it that deeply?
Well, you know, I think all of us during our lifetime as an adult, during various different stages, we look at the jobs that we're doing, the career path that we're on, and we question it. You know, are we on the right career path? Are we doing the right thing? And I had spent approximately 20 years in the mortgage industry. In fact, I still had to do some work on the side when I was a police officer because I had to make ends meet. So I never got completely out of the mortgage industry and home loans. And when I looked back on that path, that career path, I realized how many negative things were happening to me. Everything from being laid off to being fired, and I just didn't like it. It just wasn't fulfilling. And after I learned how to grasp the abilities as an adult to understand the animals, I became so intrigued that I had since left the police work, and I was back in the mortgage industry again, and I realized that just wasn't where I needed to be, and I devoted myself full-time to conducting sessions and helping people. So it really was a leap of faith. I had no idea back at that time that it would turn into what it has become. So it was really just a leap of faith and trust, and it just felt right. Whereas my work in the mortgage industry just didn't feel right. It wasn't fulfilling. I loved being a police officer, but let's face it, I'm getting older and the bad guys are getting younger and they are much faster than I am. So as a patrol officer, I was looking at a desk job and I didn't want to do that.
Right. Well, you undoubtedly made the better choice, I think. Now, when animals are around you, do you have to mentally go through some process to make the contact? I mean, because otherwise you would get a whole clutter of sort of thoughts coming to you the whole time. How do you control it?
Well, at first I had a really hard time with that. I wasn't able to turn the abilities on and off as well as I do now. And now I'm quite good at it because I have learned that it's not always the best thing to have that open, because you open yourself up to just about everything. And I would be literally drained by the end of the day. So I learned to basically close down or, turn it off like a switch. And think of it this way, Mike. When you leave your job, whatever you're doing Monday through Friday or whatever your job entails, when you go home, you don't want to talk about work or you don't want work to be running through your mind. So you do what you like. You do other things. And that's the same with me. I turn it off. When I'm in work mode, I'm working. And when I'm not in work mode, I'm not working. It's just like a light switch.
Right. So you obviously control whether or not you have communication with any animals at all. I mean, they might want to speak with you, but they can't do that unless you agree to it.
Yes, exactly. And there have been a couple very strong, I'll say, urgent messages that have come through when I've been, off duty, so to speak. And that doesn't happen very often. And now I find that the animals are very respectful of my boundaries, and they seem to sense that I'm off duty. But you know who bugs me the most now are the humans, the deceased humans. They don't seem to respect my boundaries. Not
right.
Nearly like the animals do. It's very interesting.
Yes. I mean, do you do much with humans? Because I rather gather from reading your on your website, you're really largely concerned with animals.
Well, you know, it you never know what you're going to get. I have clients that will contact me to just speak to their animals, and then I have clients who contact me to speak to just their deceased human loved ones, and then a little of both. And it started out, of course, with just being able to communicate with the animals, but the process to connect with deceased humans is exactly the same as the process for communicating with animals. It's no different. It just takes, a fine-tuning of sort, pretty much like tuning into a station on the radio. You really have to tune yourself to them because, number one, they're not always as cooperative as animals. Animals are usually very anxious to communicate, and they want to share all kinds of information. And humans can be... they can be uncooperative, and they won't answer certain questions. They only want to talk about what they want to talk about. But it's the same approach that I take. It's a meditation that I do. It's kind of a step-by-step process that I do just to make sure that I'm only engaging with those that I wish to engage with. Obviously, I work in only the light, energies of the light, with animals and humans, and I'm very careful about that. And so I don't just leave myself open to anything. I am very, very strict in my procedure.
Mm. Can you actually tell if a human or an animal is not being upfront with you and telling the truth?
Well, let's just say that I have found through my experience that animals are above and beyond, way more honest than the humans. The animals will hardly ever tell me something that isn't true, where I find that the humans have a little bit more to gain from not being 100% honest. But here's what's interesting. I used to think that the animals were 100% honest all the time, and you know, you can never say always or never. There's always that one or two instances where something happens. And yes. what I've noticed or what I've found in my sessions with the animals is that they can have a sense of humor and they can joke with me, and they can, for instance, if there's three or four cats in the household and one of them isn't using the litter box, they will point to the other one and say, he did it, when we know that it's that one. You know, they will joke around with me.
Right. I wouldn't have thought that, but it's interesting because I was going to ask you whether animals had a sense of humor, and it's nice to know that they have. I think the way they play sometimes suggests that they can enter those type of emotions. Now, so your contact anyway with animals or humans is totally telepathic. Do you actually hear words, or is it a thought that's conveyed to you?
You know, it's very similar to having a conversation like what you and I are having right now. Obviously, with an animal, they don't speak the English language, they don't speak naturally, so there is a bit of a translation process that takes place. So with the animals, I can hear actual words, but the words that I hear tend to feel more like a thought, and they're usually in my voice. It's usually like if you say just quietly in your mind, I think I'll, when I get home, I'll balance the checkbook or whatever you want to do. That thought going through your mind isn't said out loud, it's said quietly, but you can hear it in your own mind. That's what most of the animals sound like to me. I can hear it in my voice. Now, some animals like to send me the image of something or flash a picture of something at me, especially if they don't know what it's called or what the name of it is. And so I'll get like just a lightning fast flash of something. I mean, so fast you have to really be paying attention. And they also will send emotions, all of the same emotions that you and I have. They experience them sometimes on a deeper level, sometimes on a more shallow level, but they are very capable of feeling all of the emotions that you and I as humans feel.
Mm. That's
so
amazing.
It's a little bit of everything.
Yes, it's nice to know that they have that range of feeling. Now, you mentioned something in your on your web that I think most of us who have had cats are aware of. And my wife and I have had three cats in our time, in fact, all three at the same time. And you've mentioned the fact that they seem to know when it's time to go to the vet. And they always seem to be somewhere else and not where you can get hold of them. So if they can read our thoughts, it's not surprising, is it?
Not surprising at all. In fact, I find that if you're going to, let's say, have a 10 o'clock appointment at the vet's office with your cat, you're going to be unconsciously or consciously, maybe you don't even realize you're doing it, you're going to be thinking, okay, I have the appointment at 10 o'clock, I have to get the cat carrier. Then you picture in your mind where you left it, and so now you've got the image of that cat carrier in your mind, and then you're thinking, well, I have to go get Fluffy or whatever your kitty's name is, and all of those thoughts are going out into your space, your energy, and your cats can pick up on it. Now, they can associate that as a good thing or a bad thing, and usually it's not a good thing, so they will make themselves very scarce.
Well, they're rather cowardly, really, then, aren't they?
or too smart for their own good.
Probably too smart, yes.
Exactly.
The same thing clearly applies, again, I think you mentioned this, when people who have dogs think, right, I'll go and get the lead and take them out for a walk. as soon as they're thinking of that, the dog's at the front door sort of wagging its tail ready. And I think, how do they know? So I guess that again, that tells you that they can pick up your thoughts.
Well, and they do, and they've learned over time. And again, each animal is different, but they learn over time which messages or thoughts to pay attention to and which ones to ignore, because you and I as human beings are very seldom quiet in our minds. We're usually always running something through our minds. If we're on the computer, we're reading something, or we're surfing, or we're looking for something, or we're doing emails. If we're at home watching the television, we're thinking about the program we're watching, and so on and so forth. So we rarely quiet our minds to a blank slate. So the animals have learned to tune us out the majority of the time, but there are certain times and certain images and certain clues and cues, body language, etc., that they can pick up on from us when they know that, oh, here we go, it's time to go in that awful box and go in the car where it's all scary. And so they've learned to tune into certain things, and each animal is different. Some of them are very good at it, and some are not so good at it. So it just depends on the animal.
All right. Now, the other thing that surprises me, and again, it's been mentioned many times, is that when someone is at home, say, with a dog, I don't think it seems to apply so much to a cat, but you may correct me if I'm wrong on this, they seem to know ages before the other half is due back, say, from work or something like that. And that maybe they get up into the window or wherever they are, and that they're just sort of staring outside because they know that they're due to come back. Do you experience that very often?
I do, and I will have to tell you that it's not just with dogs. It is with many, many different kinds of animals. Mm-hmm. And again, in my experience, I can tell you that I have some cats that I keep only outside, and when it's dark, or I keep them outside during the daytime, and when it's dark, it's time to come in. And I can tell them, I want you back here by 5 o'clock this evening, and they're back at 5 o'clock. Now, that obviously goes through a translation process where they get into a routine, and they know when it's time to come back. It's not like they have a little watch on their wrist, and they're saying, okay, I have 15 minutes to get back to the door. But they do understand the sense of time. They may not understand the sense of a calendar, but they know the light of day and the dark of night. And they're very sensitive to changes in the cycles of the moon and the barometric pressure in our weather. And they're very, very sensitive to those things. So it's not so much like you and I looking at the clock. It's more their sense and their abilities to pick up on cycles and routines and schedules. That's what it's all about.
Right, yes. I guess to some extent that can also be said of human beings. Now, it would seem to me that distance doesn't seem to matter too much when they pick up a connection with you. I'm thinking again of the member of the family who's due back home from work. I mean, if you're around the pet, facing it or whatever, you could understand them picking up your thoughts. But I'm sure you would agree here that distance doesn't seem to be a problem.
Yeah, it's hard to understand it. And it took me in the beginning when I was practicing, it took me a while to understand how that can work. It's some people call it remote, doing a remote session. Some people just refer to it as telepathy. And in the instance, let's say, where you're driving home from work and you're running all the things through your mind of what you're going to do when you get home, obviously you might have a thought in there, well, I have to feed the dog, or I have to take the dog for his walk, or whatever thoughts that you have going through your mind. It doesn't matter how far away you are, the animals can pick up on that, just like a cell phone. You know, you can call anywhere pretty much if you have good reception, and you can pick up on that person's energy, so to speak. It's invisible. We can't see it. We can't see on a cell phone, we can't see that message going back and forth, but I'll be darned if we can't talk to each other remotely. And it's very much the same thing. It's like having an animal's cell phone. You can just dial them up. Excuse me. And I do that in my particular style, and everyone is different, of course, and there's many different ways. But I like to work off of a photograph of the animal or your description of the animal. And then, Mike, it's almost instantaneous that I connect with them. I would have to say it is instantaneous. And sometimes they show up early for their sessions, and they're coming through and butting into someone else's session. So there's always a sense of anxiousness, and they're looking forward to it, and excitement, and they want to connect, and they want to be heard. And it's very rare, but every once in a while, I will have an animal say, "A human that talks, how can that be?" So it's even a learning process for me that that the animals, some think that it's quite okay and quite normal that I communicate with them, and then every once in a while I'll get one saying, "How come so-and-so doesn't do that, but you can do this with me? Now, why can't my own people do this with me?" Very interesting how some of them will have that viewpoint and others don't.
Mm-hmm. That is because one would think whether or not the owner is aware that their pet can pick up their thoughts, that they would be doing that all the time.
Right. That's right. And they're so tuned into us. And here's a for instance. I get asked frequently, well, what do the animals talk about? What do they tell you? You know, they're creatures, you know. They're amazing creatures. You know, what do they talk about? And honestly, you never know what they're going to talk about. It's always fun and interesting and different because the same animal, even if I have multiple sessions, over so many months, the same animal can tell me all kinds of different things. It's never the same thing. They talk about all kinds of things as detailed as, I'll give you a for instance. I just had a session not too terribly long ago, and my client is on the phone with me, and I was talking to one of her animals, and they told me to tell her about a butterscotch crimpet. Now, I'm from the U.S., okay? I don't have a clue what a crimpet is, let alone a butterscotch crimpet. Obviously, it's something yummy. And yes. It turned out that this particular client had just eaten a butterscotch crimpet before her session with me. Mm. So you just never know what they're going to bring up or what they're going to talk about. It's always a surprise, and it's always interesting, and every animal is different, and every session is different. You just never know. They really do like to talk about themselves a lot. They'll tell me about everything they like. They'll rat somebody out. You know, for instance, saying, "Well, so and so did that. So and so did this." You know, they'll get other ones in trouble, and of course, there's the ones with that sense of humor who think that they are like a comedian or they think they're the funniest thing that ever happened. It's just amazing, truly.
Yes. Right. Now, let's say a pet owner's called you to their house and they've got the pet in the room there because they've got some problems. Would you necessarily expect the pet to be cooperative? I mean, perhaps the owner is not being very complimentary. I mean, how do you deal with that when they present you with problems?
You know, I find that being a police officer has really helped me with situations like that, because as a police officer, I had to respond to calls for help, and I had to go in and mediate between humans, you know, to come to a resolution, or else somebody was going to jail, and so on and so forth. So you are, as a police officer, you're a bit like a counselor. You're dealing with everybody's problems. You know, you don't call the police when things are good. You call the police when things are bad. And I found that my experience in law enforcement really helped me when it came to resolving behavior problems or dealing with issues between the humans and the animals, because what I'm working toward is to come to bring them together so they both understand each other from their perspectives. And once you can do that, once you can show the perspective to the other one, then you try to meet in the middle and come up with some kind of a bargain or solution. So it's very much the same as a police officer. I just find myself counseling humans and their animals. And I'll give you a little secret here. It's usually the human that needs to change something, rarely the animal. The animal is usually doing a natural behavior or something that the human is not paying attention to or being sensitive enough to. And I usually spend most of my time counseling the human.
Give us an example of something like that so that we can understand what happens between the human and the pet.
Okay, perfect example. I have a client who has a Great Dane, and she rescued this Great Dane from the Great Dane Rescue, which is wonderful. I love it when there's a rescued animal. And she goes to work about 12 hours a day or more, because she's in the medical field and they have like 12-hour shifts. Well, when she's away, she puts this Great Dane into a kennel, a crate, you know, the kind that you would have very little space to be in, not the kind of kennel at like a boarding facility where it's, you know, 24 feet by 12 feet. This is like a cage. And the dog has had some accidents in the kennel while she's been away at work, and she doesn't want this. She's very upset and doesn't want the dog to have an accident. Well, she says, well, if he can go all night and not have an accident all night, then why can't he hold it during the day? And when I connected with the dog just shared with me that it felt like literally being in jail all day and being confined, and their metabolism speeds up in the daytime. So it's different at night when we're kind of in a hibernating sort of space where everything kind of slows down. So I had to educate her on, you know, I understand that you want to keep your dog in a kennel. However, you need to have somebody come over and take him out and exercise him and let him go outside. And, you know, I had to spend more time with her than I did with the dog.
Right. What sort of complaints do you find animals have in general? I mean, are they complaining about the food they've been given or the degree to which they get their owner's attention? I mean, do you find sort of some problems keep cropping up?
I do hear some common grounds among the animals. The one most common complaint that I get is, especially from dogs, is how bored they are, that they don't have anything to do. And generally speaking, this is when you start to see behavior problems pop up, because the dogs are completely bored. They require a certain amount of time, and we don't always have that time to give them, or we put them out in the yard and think that they'll go entertain themselves, or in some cases we'll even buy a second dog or get a second dog to keep that other dog company. Now we have two dogs that want our attention and want more to do with us. So that doesn't really solve the problem, it actually compounds the problem. So that's the number one. And I can't even call it a complaint, because animals rarely complain. They will talk about their situation and they will share their feelings, but they rarely complain like a human. They will just simply state it matter-of-factly, just like you and I were talking about the weather or, you know, some other topic. It's just a matter of fact. They just would say something like, you know, I really need more to do. I really feel left out. I really feel like I need to be having more direction, having more playtime, whatever it is that they want more of. And I find this to be true, especially in the working class breed of dogs, and of course any terrier of any kind. The terrier breed is, you know, notorious for having a lot of energy. It just depends on the dog. But that's number one, and especially from indoor cats, too. If you have an indoor cat, I tell my clients that have indoor cats that you are their entertainment center. You need to be entertaining your indoor cats because they don't get to go outside where going around every corner there's something new and unusual and different around the corner, whereas in the house, nothing changes. It's the same thing all the time. It becomes very dull.
Yes, I can see that. Right, now, we've been talking about animals that are alive on the earth, and you can also communicate with those that have passed on. Now, is that a whole different procedure? Is it more difficult?
You know, actually, Mike, for me, in my experience, it's easier for me to connect with the animals who have passed on that are no longer in their physical bodies. And the reason being is they're pure energy. And if you think about it, I actually read energy, or I interpret energy, or however you want to call whatever telepathy is, or mind-to-mind communication. It's all about energy. And an animal who is no longer in body doesn't have those physical boundaries around them, so to speak, that I have to kind of break down and get through, especially to some of the shyer ones, the ones who have been abused or neglected or whatever their situation is. Once they have left that physical body, it's kind of like an open book to me. It's just pure energy. I don't have to break down any walls.
Okay, so when animals have passed on, are they totally aware of the change in their situation?
Yes and no, and it's the same with humans, especially if it's an unexpected death or something quick and they didn't even see it coming. They will sometimes hover around their body for a while and not realize that they're not alive anymore. And usually there will be somebody there, either a loved one or someone will come to them and, you know, gently ease them into the reality of that they're no longer in that body anymore. But they can be very earthbound sometimes. I call it being earthbound. Excuse me. And the same is true with humans that, you know, pass very suddenly or don't understand, you know, exactly what happened, or they didn't see it coming. They can hover around their body for a while. It usually doesn't last too long, and I've also found, too, and this is very interesting to me, that if the human isn't dealing with that animal's passing, death, whatever, transition, I like to call it a transition because they just transition into a different way of being. If their human isn't dealing with it well, the animal tends to stay more earthbound because they feel obligated, they feel responsible, they feel like, oh my gosh, look what I've done to my mom or my dad. They're so upset because of me. And so they stick around and they hang around trying to help. And so it's really important that when you say your goodbyes, you give them permission to go and you release them from that. It's okay to grieve and to mourn and to miss them. But if the human is handling it poorly, the animals will stick around.
Right.
I just find that so fascinating.
Yeah, that's very much like some humans, isn't it, who have that same attachment to people and still think they are earthbound. Yes, I can see that. Now, you had a very extraordinary experience, I think, with a client some years ago called Sandra, who wanted you to communicate with her terrier mix, Portia, about some behaviour problems. And I thought that was an extremely interesting story. Would you like to relate that one?
Well, you'll have to remind me because I have done so many over the years. Just remind me which one that is.
Right. I think when you connected with Portia, the terrier, she opened the door to the other side and also brought Sandra's beloved deceased grandparents into the session.
Ah, now, yes, that happens. And the first time that this happened to me, I didn't even know exactly what was going on. When, like I was telling you earlier, connecting with deceased humans is the same process as connecting with animals. So it makes sense that if the humans that are deceased know that I'm connecting with an animal that's deceased, why wouldn't they show up and say, hey, I want to send a message too? So that's what they do. They will surprise you, so to speak. And you just never know who's going to show up.
Right. Now, it was particularly, I suppose, funny in a way that this was a phone session you were doing, and Sandra's grandfather, speaking from the other side, teased Sandra about her Birkenstock sandals. Do you remember that?
I do. I do remember that because when I get a message, when a message comes through, I don't always know if it's going to make sense to the client right away or not. Sometimes I have to think about it. And when the grandfather energy came through and started teasing her about these Birkenstock shoes or sandals or whatever they were, I didn't even know at the time what those were. Well, she just started laughing so hard because everyone in her family teases her because she wears those Birkenstock sandals everywhere. And I wasn't even really tuned in as to what they were. They obviously are a name brand, and she obviously likes them a lot. But the fact that her grandfather would bring up something as everyday, simple as that, it's also very interesting because you think of all the things that they could come through and send a message about. But he was teasing. He was making light of it, and he wanted to joke around about it too. So you just never know. I've had them show me like a whole collection of bottles. I'll see all these bottles or something made of glass, and it'll be somebody's collection, like their grandmother had a collection of old whiskey bottles or something like that. There's so many different things that loved ones come through with. I just got an email this morning from a client I had a session with yesterday, and her deceased mother came through while we were connecting with her living dogs, and her mom started to talk about a bucket, like, you know how you yes. feed horses with a bucket, that sort of bucket. Mm-hmm. And my client got really nervous, and she goes, you don't think she means someone's going to kick the bucket? You know, that's here our way of teasing, like someone's going to die. And I said, no. She's literally showing me a bucket. Well, my client couldn't understand, and she didn't know what that meant. And so I told her, well, if it comes to you later, just send me a quick little email. Well, this morning I get an email from her saying, you know, I couldn't figure out what that bucket message was. She says, I can't believe it didn't come to me. She says that her father is in a assisted living. He's not doing very well. And they come around in different groups, and people come around to entertain or visit or socialize with them. And one of the things that a recent group brought him was a little bucket. It's like a little pail, you know, like it has a handle on it. And they put different things in it, like notes or candies or chocolates. It's just made out of metal, and it's a little bucket. And her father loves it. And she says, of course, this is my mom talking about the bucket that's in my dad's room. So they will pick up sometimes the oddest things to talk about. And when that image comes through to me, whether it be from an animal or from a human, I have to, it's sometimes like playing charades, you know, the game charades where you kind of have yes. to guess what it is that they're talking about. Now, a good example of how the animals who don't speak English per se or don't speak a verbal language can understand, or how things are given to me so I understand them, is I had a client in Japan, and she sent me an email asking if I could connect with her cat. Now, the cat was alive, and it had been raised its whole life with her and her family, and they only speak Japanese in their household. And I don't speak Japanese. I don't know any Japanese at all. And she said, is it going to be a problem for you to understand my cat? And I told her honestly, I said, I don't know. I'm going to have to see. So the session came around, and I connected with the cat, and the cat spoke perfect English to me. Perfect English. And it just amazed me. It absolutely amazed me. And so this now has gone on with other animals as well. I had a very expensive show horse in Germany who was raised with the German language and German commands and a German trainer. And I know a little bit of German, but you know, not enough to carry on a decent conversation. And this horse spoke to me in English. So again, Mike, I'm so amazed at how this works and the fact that the messages will come to me in a way that I can understand them. And sometimes the message will come to me and only I understand what they're showing me. For instance, one of my grandmothers, her name is Jean, and she passed away several years ago. She will sometimes, I will see her image, or I will hear the name Jean come through. Now, that may or may not be their grandmother that I'm supposed to mention, but sometimes it's just someone with the name Jean. And I will get the image of my grandmother coming through so that I say the name Jean or so that I say grandmother or whatever it is that I'm supposed to say.
Yes.
So sometimes if the animals can't get me to say something in particular, they'll flash an image at me so I just say whatever it is that I'm looking at. And I have a perfect story for you. many, many, many years ago, I was at a psychic fair doing sessions right there at the fairgrounds, and one of my clients was sitting with me, and we were talking about their deceased dog. Well, the entire time that we were talking, now I only have a picture of the dog, and the humans are sitting across from me, and the whole time that we were talking, I saw flashing in front of me a box of breakfast cereal. Over and over again, I saw this box of breakfast cereal, and I kept asking them, okay, well, who in the family likes to eat the cereal? Who's the one who's always eating cereal? No one. We don't even buy cereal. We're just not cereal eaters. So finally, I just said to them, because the dog wouldn't let up. The dog kept sending me this image. I said, okay, is there a reason why your dog would show me a box of Fruit Loops cereal? And Fruit Loops is that sugary kids cereal.
Yes.
And they both started to laugh and laugh and laugh, and they said that Fruit Loop was the dog's nickname. That's what they used to call him.
Well, I never.
So you see, I call those Fruit Loop messages now because it's not always what you and I think it's going to be. Sometimes it wasn't about eating cereal; it was about a nickname. But the dog couldn't say nickname or name, so the dog just showed me the Fruit Loop box so that I would say Fruit Loops. That's how it happens sometimes.
Extremely
it's
clever.
It is.
And intelligent, yes.
It's very, very clever. So those are the Fruit Loop messages that come through. And I had another deceased cat come through and tell me that her mom was in the gardens. Mom's in the gardens. Moms, I call you their moms and dads. And so I kept saying this to my client. She goes, Karen, I live in downtown Manhattan. I don't have one inch of garden here. And so we kept trying to figure out what it was, and suddenly she goes, oh, my gosh. She says, the name of my building is the Westminster Gardens, and we refer to it as the gardens. So the cat was just talking about the apartment building where she lived, not about an actual garden that you would plant.
Well, it's certainly very wonderful proof that the contact is genuine. Now, something that must be perhaps difficult for you to deal with at times is when you have perhaps a pet that's dying and the owner sort of calls you in. Does a pet necessarily know that it's dying?
If it is, it depends. If it's a situation where there is an illness or something very wrong that is within that animal's body, yes, they do have an understanding that they are going to be making their transition. They don't understand it in medical terms, like they wouldn't be able to tell me that they had some kind of specific disease, although I will get information that it's around the heart or the lungs, the spleen, the digestive system, the blood system, wherever it is, they can take me to that place and tell me where it hurts or where it doesn't feel right, but they're not going to give me a medical diagnosis, nor would I want them to. I don't have medical training, so I just go by what they tell me and where I'm feeling it in my own body. So, for instance, if they're having, let's say, something going on with the spleen, I will feel it in that lower abdominal section of my body. I'll get a pinching sensation or a pain or something in that part of my body, so I can relay that to their humans. And the animals have a sense of their upcoming transition, but they don't see it as a big deal like we do. They don't make a big deal out of it. That's the humans that do that. The animals know that they're going to continue on. They know the end of their physical body does not mean the end of their existence, but they don't stress about it. They get upset when we get upset. If we're stressed about it, we're going to stress them out. But they're very understanding and accepting of death and dying. In fact, I've learned more about death and dying from the animals than from any human, because they're just so accepting of it.
Right. So when animals sense or know that their owners believe it's time to have them put down, do they have any problems with that?
Once again, it's the human that has the hardest problem with it. Some animals want to pass on their own, and some want assistance. There is something in the animal kingdom that is very important to not show a sign of illness, weakness, or injury, because it is a sign of weakness in the animal kingdom. So they're very conscious of that. They're very aware if they show signs of illness and injury. And for some, it's just to help them maintain their dignity so that the others don't see them in a weakened state. Because out in the wild, they would be probably banished from their group or herd or whatever they were, with as a group, and not allowed to come back in. So sometimes you will see in our animals, in our domestic animals, that they will go off by themselves, or they'll start to separate themselves from the family. And that's just the natural process. That's what they would do out in the wild. They would separate themselves, and then they would go off, and they would either die from the elements, they'd die from a predator, or they would die from whatever illness or disease that they had. And
right.
When we have them in our homes, and they start to separate themselves from us, we start to try to extend their life. We will do surgeries, and we will give them different medications and try to keep them here longer and longer and longer and longer. And we're always extending their life, or we seem to be extending their life. And sometimes that's okay, but sometimes it's not okay, because it's the human that doesn't want to let go. And so they're doing all these things, and the animal just is saying to me, would you please tell them to just let me go? Please just let me go. I don't want to do this anymore. It hurts just to be here. It hurts just to breathe. It hurts just to exist. I can't even get comfortable, and yet the human is in this mode, and I'm guilty too. So, I've learned, but I've done this in the past. We get these blinders on, and we just, all we think about is that, no, we can't live without this animal, and we do everything under the sun that we can. Or sometimes it's just not what the animal wants. They don't want to do that. Some of them do. I spoke one time, this is so funny. I connected one time with, it was a little dog. It was like almost 20. The thing was just, I can't even believe it was still alive. It was blind, it was deaf. It only had three legs, and it was losing its hair to, like, some allergies or something. And the client called to see if they should put him down. And the dog was like, no, I'm perfectly fine. I'm happy. I have my bed. I have my treats. I have my mom and my dad. And no, I'm fine. Now, he passed naturally, you know, less than 6 months later, but he was perfectly fine, just, you know, doing what he was doing. And it was the human thinking, oh, my gosh, this is terrible for me to keep this animal here, where the animal was saying, you know what, I'm really okay. I'm okay with this. So you just know. Every animal is different. But I will tell you, Mike, that most of the time, the animals tell me that their humans waited too long to help them make that transition, that we keep them here too long.
Yes.
They're ready, they're ready to go way before we're ready to let them go.
I can believe that. Now, Karen, we are racing towards the end of the program, and I want you to have a few minutes to tell our listeners your website address and what there is available on it. And knowing that you give phone sessions, you may also wish to give out your telephone number, so go ahead.
Well, thank you for that. I can't believe we're at the end of the segment. It just goes by so quickly. The easiest way to reach me is through my website, which is animalcommunicating.com or KarenAnderson.net. You can also find me on Facebook, and there are lots of examples on my blog, on the website, of past sessions that I've had and current sessions that I have posted on Facebook. And I do phone sessions, but I also do email sessions. So if you're not in the same time zone that I'm in, or, you know, in a different part of the world, I'll do the session, record it for you, and send the link out to you. So definitely the easiest way is through the website of KarenAnderson.net. And all the information is on there on how to contact me and how to schedule a session. There's actually an online scheduler where you can just go on and select a session. You don't even need to talk to me to schedule a session. So that's right. The easiest way.
Right. Is your book, Hear All Creatures, available directly from site?
Yes, it is. I can also personalize it if it's a gift and you want to give somebody something special, I can personalize it for you. It's on Amazon as well, and it is pretty much for all animal lovers. Everybody would enjoy it because it's all about different animals and different things that they've told me over the years. It's very, very intriguing what they will share.
Right. Now, many pet owners will obviously be very interested in the possibility that they too might be able to talk to animals. So just tell us briefly about your CD, You Can Talk to Animals.
Well, the CD is a step-by-step learn-at-home type of program where I share my secrets and the simple steps of connecting. It's so simple, Mike, that most of us are doing it right now anyhow, and we just don't realize it. So all I do is just teach you how to recognize that a message is coming in and how you would interpret that aside from your own thoughts or different things like that. It's a very, very simple process to learn. There are different exercises on there to practice, and I walk through the entire communication steps with you so that you can learn how to do this at home.
Right, that's excellent. Are you thinking of writing any more books as it happens?
I am. In fact, I have the second book already, chapter, I'm going to say, 5. I've got so many stories to share because there's just so much that has happened since I wrote the first book. I'm having a hard time deciding which sessions to put in there, you know, which stories to tell, because there's just so many fascinating ones.
Right. Now, just a quickie here, really. I didn't ask you if you can communicate with other, animals. Yeah. Have you ever tried communicating with dolphins or the like?
Oh, sure. It's the same. Wild animals in a zoo, it's the same process. And it's very much, it's wherever you focus your intention of where you want that message to go. It's very much the same.
All right. I was just curious about that. So if someone has a pet sort of alligator or something of that nature, you can still communicate.
Absolutely. I've talked to hedgehogs, pot-bellied pigs, tarantulas, snakes. Oh. You name it. I actually have a session coming up with a cow, if you can believe it.
Oh, dear. Oh, well, that's wonderful. I mean, you have to think to yourself, why not? Anyway, it's been very interesting to hear your story, Karen, and I'm very thankful that you came on. It's been very interesting indeed. So I'm sure our listeners really enjoyed hearing it, and I wish you every success in the future. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much for having me.
Right, dear friends, my guest next week will be Natasha Rosewood, who is a psychic coach, author of two books, a facilitator and TV and radio personality. So thank you for being with me today. I do hope you can make it next week. God bless you all. Thank you.